here's the thing. God is good, and we are not. But God is so good that we are loved. And through his justice and through his goodness, he took care of our sin by placing it on his son, Jesus, so that we could have relationship with him. See, left to our own devices, man, we're some bad apples. We're some rotten scoundrels. We are sinners, y'all. But there is living proof that God can take what is bad and make it good. He's not finished until our tree is flourishing. We're here to talk about it all. The rise, the fall, the faith, the fear, the good, the bad, the wins, the losses,
life, love, and all of the above.
And we're here to have fun while we do it. This is the
Bad Apples Podcast.
Let's go.
Bless God Almighty.
We are back. We are back. I know that people probably thought that we gave up doing podcasts for Lent.
Never.
That is not the case. We've just been, we've just been missing each other. I'd say it's busyness. Some of it's busyness, but some of it, like, I've been getting over being sick.
Yeah, man.
You were sick.
Yeah.
There's just stuff going on. I mean, it's just a wild time.
It's
a wild time out there.
It's been a wild time, let me tell you. Like, sometimes I felt like I'm hitting a wall like Dale Earnhardt in the 90s.
Oh, geez. It's still too soon.
Speaking of Dale. What a legend.
What a legend. Great recovery. Nobody noticed. Not a soul. Everybody thought that was appropriate.
I'm in my NASCAR era, you know?
Oh, I forgot.
Boogity, boogity, boogity.
Did that make the podcast? I can't remember.
Oh, for sure it did.
I couldn't remember if we talked about it.
I ended the podcast on boogity, boogity, boogity.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah,
oh,
man, gosh. It made it.
Yeah. Well, that's still going on.
Yeah, dude.
You know, almost 40 days later, still going on.
Dude, I started NASCAR for Lent, and I'm still at it.
I can attest to the push-up thing. I haven't missed a day yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I stopped all chocolate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man.
But I am proud to say that I've had crumble cookie.
Oh, what'd you think?
Overrated. Overrated.
You're such a
it's
hater.
It's the Starbucks of cookies, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you're just such a hater. But the problem, though, is Starbucks is good.
Mm-mm.
It is.
Mm.
It's good.
It's mediocre.
Okay. But the nice thing, here's the thing.
Oh, boy.
I've got a theory. Here's why crumble cookie, Starbucks, McDonald's, Chipotle, places like this, they make it. They make it because it's the same thing every time. It's consistent. It's good. It's good to the point that you expect it.
Crumble can't be consistent because I had four cookies. One out of four was great. I had two more cookies. One out of two.
But you know that you're going to get a premium cookie experience without having to hunt down a bakery, like a real bakery.
Incredibly delicious downtown.
Hey,
Springfield.
I get it. I'm not saying
10 times better.
I'm not saying that they're better than our boy Patrick. But
shout out to Patrick.
What I am saying is that they are a consistent thing. You know what you're getting when you roll in. And that's the beauty of Starbucks. Starbucks does it better than all the other ones.
I'll give you more consistency with Starbucks than I will with Crumble.
I still think you're wrong.
But, you know, but if I loved every cookie, then I'd be like, all right.
Oh, yeah.
This is consistent.
Sure.
But then, you know.
But it's, again, it's more about the
experience.
The experience, okay. And just the idea that you are going to a premium cookie
I'll give you experience.
Without having to hunt down a premium cookie establishment.
I'll give you
Is it better than Panera?
Is it better than Panera as far as the cookies?
Yes.
I mean,
yes, it is. The right answer is yes.
I guess I don't go to Panera for their cookies.
Exactly.
Though.
But so what other cookie chain is there?
I mean, yeah, there's not another cookie chain.
I have not been to Crumble.
For me, it's still not better than Great American Cookies.
Okay.
In the mall.
All right. You got me. You got me.
You never been there?
No. Never been there.
Kia says no way it's not better than Great American Cookies.
Yeah.
But I think it's a nostalgia thing.
Yeah. I would think like Otis Spunkmeyer is the only ones that come to mind for me, the ones that you can buy in the gas station that are like fresh baked. So good.
I hear that there's a place called Insomnia Cookie that's like supposed to rival Crumble, but it's not anywhere around here. I don't think.
I didn't know if it was a chain. I thought it was like a.
I don't know. I feel like it's a chain because it's all over TikTok.
Okay. Okay. You
know? So.
Well, cookies. I like Crumble Cookie. I've not been to the one in Springfield yet because it's always stupid busy and it's stupid expensive. So
it is.
I do think it's very good. I'm not a hater, but I also am, you know, aware of what it is.
Yeah. I will say that there were some cookies that I thought, wow, this is amazing.
At Crumble?
Yeah. I didn't hate all of it. But what I'm saying is I bought for my birthday, I bought four.
Uh-huh.
Only loved one.
Okay.
Didn't like two. Okay. And was mediocre on one.
What were the two you didn't like?
The chocolate chip.
Yeah, the chocolate chip's nothing to write
home. I'm like, what is this? And then, oh my gosh. I forgot the one I didn't like. I posted it. I rated them.
See, I really like, they've got a cinnamon roll one that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The one I loved, I thought I would hate. Which was the cornbread cookie.
Oh, I bet you that was so good. See, the thing, though, if you're going to go that bold on a cookie, it better be good. It better be good.
Yeah.
So.
And the other one I really loved was the dulce de leche that came out this week. It was really good.
A little bit of cinnamon and sugar. And
but then, and we'll get off Crumble here in a minute. But
for a guy who hates
we got the raspberry Danish, right?
Okay.
And, dude, the promo for this thing had this massive, like, raspberry filling, Danish filling, cream cheese. Dude, we got this little tiny quarter-sized raspberry. Dollop. And it's like, what is this?
Was it good?
No. Oh, okay. Made me mad.
Was it good, but it just still made you mad?
It was mediocre and made me mad.
Ah, all right, there it is. You heard it here first, guys. Like, Crumble Cookie. Is it overhyped? Probably, but does Cody actually like it? Yes. Yes,
well, he does. You know, body by cookies. So,
anyway, we are drinking American Dirt.
Red blooded American Dirt.
And man, you made it like Illinois black dirt.
Dude, style. I dialed back on it too.
It is.
I tried to dial back on it and it is strong tonight.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Strong like the wheels on Jeff Gordon's ride.
Oh, my goodness. Is that another?
Last one. It's NASCAR.
All right.
Last one.
I didn't know if you were taking another shot at Dale.
No. Because
Jeff Gordon didn't run into a wall.
I love Jeff and Dale.
Okay. All right.
I'm not team either or.
All right. So here we go. What we've decided to do as a special right before Easter thing, something that Cody pitched a while ago was a celebrity pastor fantasy draft.
Oh yeah.
Like if you had to draft a team. Never really figured out how we would do that.
Yeah.
Well, but in honor of March Madness.
Which started today. Mm-hmm.
As we are recording this.
Oh yeah.
In honor of March Madness, we have decided to do a celebrity preacher bracket.
Yeah, we did.
Celebrity preacher bracket. Now, I know what you're wondering. How in the world do you determine winners between these two celebrity preachers? And who determines which preacher is a celebrity? These are people that we have come up with.
Yeah, yeah.
In our own conversations.
Yes.
And so what we're going to do
is
I think only to make it fair.
Yes.
To only make it fair, we have to, I will argue for the second person in each matchup.
Oh, I like that.
The second person in each matchup. You have to argue for the first person. We're trying to change each other's mind and decide who the winner is between each of these settings. So could you tell people what are, we've only got 16, right?
16.
All right, so who are our 16 pastors?
All right, should I go matchups or just go through the names?
I think you just go through the names.
All right. Joel Osteen.
Oh, yeah.
John Piper.
Okay.
Joyce Meyer.
Okay.
Craig Groeschel.
You are going through the matchups.
Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Okay.
Bishop
T.D. Jakes.
Andy Stanley.
Yeah.
Beth Moore.
Okay.
John MacArthur.
Oh, I didn't think about John MacArthur. Yeah. That's actually going to be a heated one.
Yeah, it is.
Beth versus John.
I know.
That one's real life.
This right. randomly did this, and I could not believe it. Judah Smith.
Okay.
Benny Hinn.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, he's the. I'll explain.
you're gonna have to argue for him.
Stephen Furtick.
Okay.
Jenny Allen.
All right.
Which I don't know, but you know.
Yeah.
Michael Todd.
Yep.
Kenneth Copeland.
All right, you're going to have to do that one too. We're going to have to
Louis on it. Giglio.
Giglio.
Yeah. And Mark Driscoll.
Oh, my. Oh, my. So we've got quite the slew of celebrity preachers here. The way that we're going to do this is we're just going to cage match them here. Probably the next round we'll come up with some sort of formula to properly put these folks further down the line. But let's go ahead and get into it right now.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. All right. You got Joel Osteen. I got John Piper.
I got Joel Osteen.
So tell me.
Here's the thing with Joel Osteen, okay? Yeah. Like him or not, he's a celebrity preacher. All right?
That's true.
And if you're looking at net worth, let's talk about just net worth.
Net worth.
Of celebrity preachers. Where do you think he resides in the net worth realm?
You did some homework here. I did not do this for John
Piper. Well, I didn't do it for every one of them.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know. Where does he reside?
150 million, somewhere in that range. Okay. Somewhere in that range, with his church bringing in close to 50 million a year just in giving. Okay. The man's written over 43 books. Have they been biblical? Probably not. No way.
43 books.
43 books. Hold on. Let me look at my notes here. Okay. 45 books.
45 books.
with millions of readers.
No way.
Yeah, for sure. His church members, you're getting a weekly physical 50,000 church members on the campus of the Great Lakewood Church.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So.
All right. Well, okay. You've made quite the compelling pitch for Joel Osteen.
Okay.
I'm not a Joel Osteen fan.
Me either.
I am a fan of John Piper. So that gives me a little bit more to use here.
Okay.
As a guy who's heard John Piper preach, who enjoys his teaching.
In person?
Oh, yeah. Many times.
Okay.
Because of passion and all kinds of those. Anyway, he has written not 45, but 71 books.
What? Are you serious, actually?
All of them are Reformed theology. All right.
Oh, wow.
If you're a Reformed person.
I like that.
His church doesn't have 50,000 people. Right. There's no way.
Right.
Like, all those other marks, got to be. I don't know that he knows what Instagram is.
Sure.
So,
sure.
On the celebrity status, he's not very celebrated.
Okay.
It's tough because John Piper, definitely a better preacher.
Oh, for sure.
But Joel Osteen.
So, what are the standards that we're going by here? What is the weight?
For celebrity pastors. So I think.
Okay.
I think we got to give it to Joel. Plus.
You got to give it to Joel.
Plus, he was just in the news with the whole terrible thing that happened at Lakewood Church.
Okay.
His church was in the spotlight.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Majorly in the spotlight.
I forgot about that.
So I think round one, it's got to be Joel Osteen. I think it's got to be Joel Osteen.
So, yeah. Okay. I guess. But let's make it clear that we're not going by who preaches more sound doctrine.
Oh, here. No. Yeah, for sure. For sure. We're talking about celebrity pastor cage match.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, I think that Joel Osteen, he is really convinced of his message.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Not that John Piper is not. He definitely is. But John Piper, he is not celebrity pastor status. Yeah. Most people listening to this probably have no clue who John Piper is.
Right.
And so for him to even be in celebrity pastor conversation, has he written enough books to be there? Yes.
Yeah.
For sure. Is he smart enough to be there? Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Is he a good enough preacher to be there? Yes, for sure. Has he preached to large crowds? Yes, for sure. But is he Joel Osteen? No. Mm. And I think that Joel Osteen,
man,
he's got to take it.
Man. Sorry, John.
So
Joel advances.
Okay, here we go. That was just round one.
All right.
I'm already sweaty. All right. This time we got Joyce Meyer versus Craig Rochelle. Can I lead off with Craig Rochelle?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Craig Rochelle. If you're not familiar with Craig Rochelle, not only is this man a great preacher, he's an incredible leader. He's an incredible speaker. Mm. He's a pretty good writer. Some of the books that I like to listen to his books because they're not like super deep.
Love his books.
They're more they're easy to listen
to. They're sermons.
Yeah, they're sermons. Yeah. They're sermons. They're not, it's not deep, deep, deep theology. Like you need to read it with a highlighter sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but Craig Rochelle not only has all of that going for him, I'm going to save my finisher. But
have you
seen Craig Rochelle?
Oh yeah,
he could be a fitness influencer.
He's an American specimen.
I think that people follow him on Instagram, not even for the biblical content, just to see his biceps.
Yeah,
he's
for sure,
massive, huge human being.
He is.
So I don't care who he steps into the celebrity pastor ring with.
Yeah,
good old Joyce Meyer.
Oh,
she going down.
She's going down.
She going down.
All right. Well, you know, here's the thing: when you're talking about Joyce Meyer. Okay.
This is like the female version of Joel Osteen.
Dude, why'd you have to take my line? That was what I was going to say.
My bad.
But yes, you're very correct. This is the female Joel Osteen. Yep. And, you know, if we're talking about her books, The Battlefield of the Mind, she knows a thing or two about battles. You know what I'm saying? She's been in the warfare and spiritual warfare in high heavenly places, bless God.
No way.
So she knows what battling is about. She knows about speaking. She knows about writing. And let's give a disclaimer that I'm really not a Joyce Meyer fan. But arguing for her point, she's written all kinds of books. Don't know the number. But she is among the top five most influential pastors in America.
I really didn't do enough homework.
Which really breaks my heart. It really makes me sad.
Okay.
You know, so where are we at?
No, here's the thing. Craig Rochelle
mm-hmm.
is the pastor of Life Church.
Mm.
Life Church, who owns, funds the YouVersion Bible app.
Oh, yeah.
Life Church,
true.
That is the first meta church.
Ooh.
First meta church. I think, here's the thing.
Mm.
We already gave it to just questionable theology on the first guy.
Yeah.
I think we gotta win one for the good guys. Plus, he is on trend.
I think that's the buzzer beater.
I think so, too. That's what my finisher was.
That's the buzzer beater.
Meta church.
Craig Rochelle. With the upset.
And thinking outside the box on YouVersion and making that stuff free, man, to people.
And
it's
like
crazy.
It's so connected. And not only that.
And he's got hands in on all that.
Yeah.
Not only does he preach every week and lead a church, he's got...
Other churches can put their devotionals on there, man.
And Life Church stuff has free resources
for
churches.
They sure do.
So you're a bad preacher, go ahead and go and use... were you about to say that you used?
I used it. I wouldn't say I was a bad preacher, but I definitely used his sermon, like his sermon series, and like his stuff, and then I just added my own meat to
it. The art,
yeah.
So, yep. I got you. All right,
Craig Rochelle takes down Joyce Meyer.
All right, here we go.
All right, here we go.
Next round.
This is an interesting one.
I think you got to lead off. I don't know much about
Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Right.
Okay. Here's the thing about Bishop T.D. Jakes. He is immersed in controversy at the moment because of the whole Diddy stuff.
Really?
Yeah, Diddy has evidently had him at some parties. I don't know if you know the stuff about Diddy, but he's got a bunch of sexual lawsuits out on him, sexual misconduct, sexual harassment. He's like 2024's R. Kelly. Okay.
Oh man,
it's bad. He's canceled and all that. Well, come out like it's kind of like Epstein Island. But Diddy's mansion.
Oh, man.
And it's like whoever's been at Diddy's mansion, you know they were involved in some crazy stuff. Well, T.D. Jakes has been, kind of put in that conversation.
Uh-oh.
And it's come out that it wasn't true. But then people are kind of like, oh, no, he's been weird. So he's immersed in controversy at the moment. But I have a heart tie to T.D. Jakes, okay?
Okay.
Now, he's considered prosperity, and I understand that. And I have connected some with his messages over the years. Not so much anymore, but over the years, I've really connected to what he said. And here's the thing. Here's why I have a little bit of bias. And I don't know if you know what I'm going to say, but he holds a close little place in my heart because you know where he's from.
No, he's from West Virginia.
He's from Welch, West Virginia.
Well, Nate, nobody celebrity can come from West Virginia.
Charleston, West Virginia. He's from the streets of Charleston. He was poor and broke, and he just started preaching on the streets of West Virginia. And
The
dirt streets, man. He's got an amazing story. He's got an amazing story, and then ended up in Dallas. He's got a big church in Dallas. He's wrote some amazing books. He had his own, like, TV show for a while there. You know. The dude can flat preach one time, and I think just looking at not followers and church members and books alone, but just looking at just like how he can just go off the cuff and just preach a sermon.
Yeah.
And just how he can give some analogies. If it wasn't so filled with prosperity, man.
He's compelling to listen to. I've listened to him before. Yeah. He holds your attention.
He does.
But speaking of holding your attention.
Oh yeah,
Andy freaking Stanley.
Oh, which is another.
I think that he is this generation's preacher. Like, I think that
really.
Oh yeah, I think 100% that.
Okay,
if we were gonna pull out any of the prosperity stuff and that right. kind of stuff. Now, I think that this is personally because I am an Andy Stanley fan.
You are.
I'm a big personal Andy Stanley fan. I love the way he preaches. I like his books.
He's good.
I like the way that their church has postured themselves at North Point, where they really value the next generation, and they've doubled down on that.
Mm-hmm.
Orange is a product of that. If you're in the youth ministry world, you know Orange curriculum and that kind of stuff. But they have put a lot of energy into that. North Point Church has done a ton to fuel that, to push that. And Andy Stanley is a great communicator.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't compromise on biblical truth.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't. Now, I know that there's some people that are like, you know, he doesn't like the Old Testament.
There's some.
But we've talked about that. Go back and listen to Irresistible.
I think if you listen or read, I think you'll understand him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he's trying to throw out the Old Testament.
Right.
But I think that he is a incredible preacher, an incredible leader, leading an incredible church. And as much as I like the idea of pushing Bishop T.D. Jakes through in a world of a celebrity pastor bracket we only move Joel Osteen and not Joyce Meyer and T.D. Jakes through as well.
Okay.
I feel like to not push one or him through would be a bit wrong, but it's Andy Stanley, and he's good, and we like him.
Yeah.
And we like to encourage people to listen to him. And guess who's not in the media for controversy?
I mean, you could say Andy is in the media. He was trending for a while on X.
Yeah, trending like amongst angry Christians, not the news.
But same thing.
I am firm on, I think that Andy Stanley.
You know what, man? I'm going to stick to TD.
All right, so here's what we've decided. We do have, you have an expert.
I have an expert on this.
A third person that can help us.
A third person who could probably help us with this.
We've never called anybody in before.
We've never called anybody in. This is happening.
Let's try it. Let's see if it works.
All right, we're going to call.
If he doesn't answer, I win.
Okay, that's true. If he doesn't answer...
Yeah, he's your guy, so.
All right. This is, he's a bishop in his own right.
Okay.
He's an ordained bishop.
All right, well, that kind of feels like you've skewed the tables.
Hello? Hello? Is this Bishop Sherman?
This is he.
Hey, Bishop Sherman, you're on the Bad Apples podcast.
Sherman, where are you from?
Oh, my goodness. I'm from Logan, West Virginia. Oh!
This is rigged.
It's not rigged. So Sherman, we needed an expert, an outside opinion on this celebrity preacher bracket that we're working through, and we've come to a standstill here, okay? And the matchup is Bishop T.D. Jakes versus Andy Stanley, regular Andy Stanley.
Oh, God.
Regular Andy Stanley.
You know,
I'm gonna find out who's written more books.
So Garrett is at a standstill on Andy, and you know, my heartstrings is pulling at old TD, you know. So I said, what better way to call an actual bishop himself, who's an ordained bishop in the Church of God, and also who has pastored several churches from West Virginia to Illinois. So you know all about ministry. And you know what it's like to be a preacher, because, hey, you know what? Sherman Jones actually should, he could qualify to be on this bracket. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't like to brag, but.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Sherman, weigh in on who do you think should advance? We've already had Joel advance. He beat out John Piper. And we already had Craig Groeschel take down Joyce Meyer. So now we're at TD and Andy Stanley.
And Andy Stanley has written 24 good books.
Mm.
You're right. And his leadership qualities and
there we go. His
podcast on leadership is just so good.
You know who'd never been to Diddy's mansion either?
Oh, God.
I mean, you know, the current situation that is happening amongst our celebrity pastors, it makes it hard to determine.
Sherman, what am I hearing here?
That's right.
Because, you know, some things that Andy Stanley does is a little questionable these days.
Oh, okay. Come on. Not morally, all right?
Okay, Sherman.
The current environment. But I can say, I mean, T.D. Jakes, he can just preach anybody down. I mean, you're looking at a man who, he could preach the ABCs and he'd run.
Okay.
So.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. This is a hard question.
I think it is.
You got to pick.
Which one? You got to break this tie.
I would think the one that has been so life-changing in my ministry and that has really spoken into my life and really given me a platform in the ministry.
Oh, my and
made me into the pastor that I am today.
Praise God. Who is it?
I'm gonna have to go with Bishop. Oh.
I knew it. You set it up. You called bishop.
T.D. Jakes.
You called a bishop from West Virginia. Oh, hey, who do you think, Andy Stanley or Bishop T.D. Jakes? Our guy from West Virginia is also a bishop. Yeah.
No idea he was going to pick Bishop.
Yeah, whatever.
And I must say, you know, us bishops have to stay together.
I knew it.
Praise God.
And God. But I will say, if things change towards the negative with Bishop Jakes, and things don't, things come to light.
Yes.
Things have been said. I don't know if they are true or not. We will see. Things will be determined.
Yes, they will.
Are you going to take his ring from him? Is that what you're saying? You're going to put Andy Stanley through to the second round?
If things go in a negative direction with him, call me back.
And we'll
redo this episode.
Bishop, we are so happy that you answered the phone, for one.
Yeah,
and for thank real. You for,
usually when you call, I don't answer.
I know that. It was 50-50 on what was going to happen here.
Well,
it really was. It was a God moment that I answered.
I absolutely hate your answer, but I am glad that you did answer, and we're glad that you're a part of the show tonight.
Yeah, man.
You know, I'm honored to be on this show, Bad Apples Podcast. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is a highlight in your ministry for sure.
It really is. I feel like when this releases,
yes,
my phone is going to be ringing, and it's going to take me to a new height in ministry. So I thank you.
Oh, man.
Amen. All right, Bishop. We love you. See you soon.
You have a blessed day.
All right. Thank you. Bishop T.D. Jakes with the win. Oh,
what a bummer. What a great disappointment.
Oh, man.
All right, here we go. Beth Moore, John MacArthur. You have to argue for Beth Moore.
Dude, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how to argue.
For Beth Moore?
I've
actually figured this one out. John MacArthur loses. Beth Moore wins. Beth Moore is still preaching, still out there, and he tried to shoot her down.
Okay.
And so I like think that she's already smoked him in real life.
All right.
So, as somebody who is supposed to argue for John MacArthur, not even a contest. Yeah, he's got his own study Bible.
I'm Beth a big Moore fan.
Tried to knock her down in real life. No.
I'm she a big fan because I don't like John MacArthur that much.
Okay. All right. So, there
I'm
we go.
I'm a big fan of that.
Okay. I'm going to take Judah Smith because I don't know who Billy Hinn is.
Okay.
Who's Benny Hinn?
Okay, so he's another very popular prosperity gospel, but he is more of the signs and wonders type. He's the guy that you see on TikTok who waves his hand and 100 people fall out.
Oh my goodness.
And he's I don't know where he's from. He's foreign. But he was always the televangelist guy on late at night. And I mean, like he had a video go viral of him like waving his jacket, like a whole congregation falling out. And they
Israeli.
Put it to,
he's an Israeli.
Okay. Yeah. And they put it to Bodies Hit the Floor and it went viral.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, I don't know what churchy pastors, I think he's had books, but he's just one of the like top, you know, prosperity. Like you're going to talk about prosperity preachers. Benny Hinn's going to come into the conversation. You know what I mean?
Oh, and I see he's, coupled with Kenneth Copeland.
For sure.
Now I know who Kenneth Copeland is.
Yeah, because you saw him. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, all right. So, all right. I don't know Benny Hinn. I don't really need to know Benny Hinn.
No, me either.
Here's what I do know.
Oh, yeah.
I listened to a sermon from Judah Smith.
Absolutely.
At Passion.
Yeah.
2013. And I can still remember that whole stinking sermon.
Easy.
It was about Shark Week. And then it was about how, you know, what kind of seal dies? The seal all by itself.
Yeah.
And so you got to be together. And he used that and he tied it to scripture. He talked about community and he's teaching this whole room of students. And my mind was so vivid. His story was so good. Mm. Like it was great. Then I picked up his book, Jesus Is, you know, and read that. And it was really easy to read. And I loved it. And I tied it into youth group at that time. And it was so good. Judah Smith.
Yeah.
And Judah Smith, he's like pals with Justin Bieber, isn't he?
Yes. Justin calls him his pastor.
Deal. Done.
And my thing is
celebrity pastor. Yeah. Pastor to celebrities.
My thing is with him,
plus
too.
Plus, he looks like a celebrity pastor.
I'm supposed to, you know, argue for Benny Hinn. My thing is Judah Smith's one of my favorites.
Mm.
And, like, to be a celebrity pastor and to still what I feel preach the gospel and still be really, really rooted in scripture and be as popular as he is a testament, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't listen to him very often. A couple messages I've heard from him were good.
He's good.
I think he wins this one. And plus, I don't know who Benny Hinn is.
Yeah, I do too.
And Judah Smith's got way better style.
Yeah, for sure. So. And he's, you know, he's got some really good books. He's got about three really good books.
Yeah. So all right, Judah Smith.
Judah.
Okay, here we go. Stephen Furtick, Jenny Allen. I get Jenny Allen. You get Stephen Furtick.
Okay.
I'll go first.
I'm getting stuck with the bad ones here.
What are you talking about? Stephen Furtick?
Come on.
You don't like Stephen Furtick?
Okay, we'll get there.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Okay. So Jenny Allen is the leader of the IF gathering. Like she helped start IF, get that going.
Okay.
Big thing for women's ministry.
Yeah,
big
it's amazing. Thing for women's Incredible.
Ministry. Like, and she's written some books, and she really challenged women to not only grow in their faith, but come together and grow together. Yeah. And they're doing big things with IF.
It's huge.
She has been, I was just listening to her episode on the Carrie Newhoff podcast where she was talking about how she is really working with the next generation and trying to pastor on college campuses and those kind of things. And she is seeing some incredible fruit from the ministry done there.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I appreciated too. She didn't take full credit for all of that.
Sure. Like
it was something that, hey, I understand that there was a ministry here before me.
Yeah.
And I come in and I get to be a part of these pretty awesome moments. Mm-hmm. And it's not because of me. It's because of Jesus and what Jesus is doing through these other ministries. So really cool stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She's been doing this for a really long time. She's a bit of a stretch to call a celebrity.
Yeah, I'd never heard of her.
Because, and also like, she doesn't pastor a church per se.
Okay.
She
It's a movement.
Yeah, it's a movement. Yeah. Oh yeah. And so if you talk about like Four Walls Church, no, she's not doing that. She's But is she pastoring a body of believers?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, she's doing that. So I don't know. Celebrity preacher, I wouldn't call her maybe that, but she is more famous than I am or ever will be. So
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like an underdog seed coming
underdog
in here.
Seed. I like underdog
that.
Seed.
I like that.
But Stephen Furtick.
Stephen Furtick. Here's the thing. I cut my teeth on listening to Stephen Furtick. When I was preaching, man, like that was, I'd get a hold of his sermons and I'd listen and I'd be like, man, this is how I want to preach. At the time, I was really just like, you know, I didn't really hear much that was as controversial as it is today. Like he has said some pretty off the wall things. I wouldn't say controversial as in like illegal or, but like definitely questionable. Like we're not little gods. Like we're not gods. Mm. And he's kind of,
he said that.
Yeah. He's kind of put that into this realm that, you know, that we're God because God's in us and we're God. That makes us God. And it's like, no, I understand maybe where you're coming from, but that's not what scripture is talking about.
Sure.
So he's really kind of went to a place where I'm like, yeah, I can't really connect to him anymore. But man, some of his early books, Sun Stand Still and Greater and Unqualified, were some of my favorite reads because I felt like I connected so much to them. But if you're going to go metrics, if you're going to go stats,
he just blows her out of the water.
14,000 people on the main campus. Then 20 locations. Just like, we're not even talking about, like, he's got a campus in Toronto, I think. He's got a campus in some other states. Then you got all the locations that are just in the Charlotte, North Carolina area.
Yeah.
So.
And he's tough to pin down, too.
He's tough.
Like,
yeah.
He's all over the place doing a lot of different things.
He is. Yeah. And then, like, then I got to think about, like, he's written a lot of songs for Elevation Worship.
He's got his name on all of them. So I don't know how many he's actually written.
Yeah, but. So a lot of what you're, especially the early stuff, I think he's kind of delegated it now to the
Chris Brown guy. But he still has his name on every one of them.
Yeah, but like some of the early stuff, man, it's like, okay, like he's writing all this stuff. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know how much he's actually writing. I do know when I think celebrity pastor, man, he fits the mold.
He does.
And if we push through Joel Osteen because he is the celebrity pastor, like that everybody comes, like this has got to be, he's got to be in that conversation.
Yeah, but what Jenny Allen is doing for women
is so great, but she's not the celebrity pastor that Stephen Furtick is.
So you don't want to give an underdog upset?
Not here.
Yeah.
I wanted the Andy Stanley upset.
I feel you.
So I think it's got to be Stephen Furtick. I think.
Yeah, Stephen Furtick.
You know, that's just a really unfortunate matchup for
it is, yeah.
Jenny Allen.
And this was all randomly seated.
Yeah.
So
random.
Yeah.
Totally random. Okay. So Michael Todd, Kenneth Copeland.
This is an interesting one. Oh, gosh.
All right. So if you don't know who Kenneth Copeland is, he is a crazy man.
He is extremely crazy.
Who has tons of money and
dude,
who has definitely exploited the church for his own personal gain.
Private jets.
Private
out jets. Out the wazoo. Okay.
Yep.
You know what his net worth is?
What?
If Joel Osteen's is 100 and some million, how much you think Kenneth Copeland's is?
$300 million.
$300 million. What it was. That's what it says.
Insane.
It's
insane.
For someone not to have, I don't think he has a nailed down four walls church. I don't think he does either. I think he's,
really?
I think he's connected to a church called Eagle International Ministries or something like that, that I found, but I couldn't find, like, just Googling a church that he's four walls pastoring.
Stupid
Kenneth
wealth.
Copeland Ministries is what he's doing.
Stupid wealth.
I could be wrong by that, so you can fact check me, but like, you know, it's insane. But
yeah.
But the Eagle, whatever he's affiliated with, has only like 1,500 people.
I was going to say, he is not, I don't know where he's getting all that money.
Yeah, same.
I mean, that's just an unreal amount of money.
And I'm not saying to go watch this, but if you ever watched Righteous Gemstones on HBO Max, this is exactly what that show is portraying.
They're making fun of him. Got it.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, so that's Kenneth Copeland. I would say that neither of us are a fan. I've never actually heard him preach. I've just seen him get stopped and be like, "What are you doing, man?"
I can't connect the gospel to anything he preaches.
Gotcha.
Nothing.
And then there's Michael Todd. I know you're a Michael Todd fan, maybe follower.
I used to be.
Okay. He's gotten a little bit like the preacher sneakers thing. Some of the stuff, like, it is an interesting combo, these two.
Yeah.
Because you have, on one hand, you see with Kenneth Copeland, there's all this pursuit of wealth.
Yeah.
With Michael Todd, I feel like there's a pursuit of influence and status.
It's influence and status
for
him.
And I don't think he's embarrassed by that either. I think that is like he has intentionally put a lot of energy into becoming a social icon.
Yes.
Social media.
And I think with Michael Todd, where I land is like, I know a lot of people's beef with him right now is how far he goes with stuff he does. Yeah, the stuff he does, like the illustrations.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
I mean, it's him spitting in the dude's face.
Yeah, the thing they did on Easter just, a few years ago.
And the whole show of like, if it's shock value, I don't think the gospel needs shock value.
No, I
know it doesn't need shock value.
No,
we don't need that type of show.
Sure,
and I understand illustrations. Don't get me wrong. I love illustrations, but sometimes it's just too dang far.
Yeah.
But Michael Todd, he's had a lot of influence here lately. I mean, he's got a pretty good sized church, and it's went from, you know, small to big pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. Stephen Furtick co-signed him several years ago in like 2018, brought him out to his church. That's how I heard him. I was still listening to Elevation Church at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was this dude named Michael Todd, and they're like, we just heard this guy. He was preaching in Oklahoma, and we just heard him and wanted to bring him out.
Yeah.
And then that sermon that he preached was very good. And I thought, man, this guy can flat bring it.
Yeah.
And his analogies and the way he connected scripture, I was like, okay.
He's a good preacher.
He's a good preacher.
He's a good preacher. Again, we're quick sidebar. None of this is a commentary on, you know, theological preference.
It's not
for any of us.
Like,
or even shade. We're not throwing shade on him. Other than Kenneth Copeland, he deserves all the shade.
All shade to him. And maybe Benny Hinn.
But oh yeah, I forgot about that guy. I don't know him well
and
enough.
Joel. Sorry. But like so the thing is with Todd, like I feel if he would dial back and just let his preaching be preaching and just let his sermons speak for themselves, I really feel like he wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah.
But he's just so much of a, and he's also a music producer, and that's what he was before he was a preacher, and like so he's all about show and performance.
Right.
So you know, I mean, he's got a big following.
I think he wins
several books.
I think he wins.
You know, I'm definitely gonna pick him over Kenneth Copeland.
Yeah, I think he wins. Yeah. So
Mike Todd.
All right, last one: Louis Giglio, Mark Driscoll.
Interesting.
Which one do you want?
I want Louis, man.
All right, are you for Louis?
Oh, you mean which one I want to argue for?
Yeah.
I'll argue for Mark, because since I've played the bad guy so far, and I think you know Louis a little bit more than I do.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because of passion.
Heard, so. Yeah. So, and I've talked about it before on the podcast. Passion Conference has been a big part of my journey and all these other things. And so I've heard Louis Giglio speak. I love what he's doing.
Yeah.
Absolutely love what he's doing.
For sure.
I love what his church is doing. I love what they're doing with the music. I love that he is... He's very intentional too about leveraging the platform that he has been given to elevate other people and other voices to help the next generation grow in their faith. And he has a great crew with the Passion team.
Yep.
He's got people that love him. He loves them well. I love Louis Giglio. I think that he's a great, great guy. I would love to meet him.
Yeah.
So Louis, if you're listening, give me a call.
Come on, man. Garrett wants to meet you.
Yeah, right. I just think it would be interesting to talk with him.
Yeah.
And one of the fun things that – one of the things that I think is pretty cool about being a Christian and believing that there is a life after this life is, am I ever going to meet and be friends with Louis Giglio? Probably not.
Right.
Probably not. But I would like to think that in the span of eternity together in the same place – I can walk up to this guy and be just say thank you for being obedient to the call that Jesus placed on your life.
Yeah.
Because though you don't know me, what you said yes to impacted me and helped shape my faith and grow my faith. So big Louis.
And he's got some good books.
He does have some good books.
He's got some good books.
But I don't think that Louis does not stand out as a preacher, as a writer.
Sure.
Really even like as a church leader, because his church is pretty new.
Yeah.
And comparatively size-wise, it's not that big.
Right.
But as a leader, as a visionary, and as somebody who equips other people and pushes the ball forward, man.
And just to be clear, he's this kind of the guy with passion, yeah, right? He's the guy that started it.
He's the guy that started Passion Conference.
Yeah, okay.
And we talked about how that came about.
Yeah.
You know, a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
So anyway, I love Louis Giglio, but Mark Driscoll, tell me.
All right, Mark Driscoll, talk about rough around the edges.
You're telling me, man.
Talk about, you know, here's the thing about Mark Driscoll. I used to really like Mark Driscoll. I liked his brashness. I liked how I was hearing something that I felt like I needed to hear, but nobody in my church circle would ever say.
Sure.
You know, him standing on a Sunday night and answering questions that were completely off the wall, like, oh my God, who is asking this in church? And what pastor is answering this in church? He got a lot of flack for it, but I felt like he was willing to have conversations that no other pastor was willing to have with his church members. And he was willing to do it in a public way. Now,
Turns out, the brashness.
He's
just a jerk.
He's a jerk.
He's mean. He's not a kind. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out that was not him just being raw. That was him being. He's just a jerk.
That's just who he is.
But I mean, you can look at Mark Driscoll. If I'm wanting to make an argument for him, like he's one of the first like new generation of like celebrity preachers. Like the Mars Hill Church was booming back in the day. Like I remember a lot of the church growth was really wanting to follow what they were doing. Mm-hmm. The coffee shops in the church, mm-hmm. the coffee in the worship. Like they were really
wanting. So funny because I feel like a Mark Driscoll would be like, you know, give me that coffee and punt it across the stage. You know?
right. Yeah.
And yeah. Here's the thing. I was going to throw Mark Driscoll out just because he's not pastoring that mega church anymore, Mars Hill. But he is still pastoring.
He is still pastoring.
So here's what I think. Mm-hmm. I think he beats Louis Giglio because...
Really?
Mark Driscoll had the fall from celebrity pastordom.
He did.
But somebody still hired that guy.
He sure did.
There is a whole stinking podcast about how this guy is...
Forgot about
not,
that.
Not a good church leader or a, you know, does not.
And doesn't cultivate us a culture of good. It's a culture of bad. Like the whole thing is bad.
And that dude managed to get another job being a pastor someplace. Sure did.
And I pray that there's been some redemption and restoration there. I pray that it's not just the same cycle.
And I don't know. I don't know him. I don't know his story.
Yeah.
So. But he's managed to get rehired. Plus, as a big fan of Louis Giglio, I kind of want him out of this so that he's not, so that we can quit talking about him.
Let him fall on the grenade.
Just let him go. There are no prizes at the end of this. And whoever wins, I'm not sure that they actually want to win.
It's true.
So the commentary on this is not that whoever wins the celebrity pastor bracket on our end, it's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see how it all shakes out. Know. But I think Mark Driscoll.
All right, man. So Mark Driscoll takes Louis Giglio in our last match
of
the night.
Okay. So following along, the people who moved on.
Yeah.
We've got Joel Osteen in the Elite Eight.
Yep.
Against Craig Groeschel.
Ooh.
That'll be interesting.
Hair versus muscle.
Bishop T.D. Jakes.
You're bitter about that.
You're going to call Sherman back, and he's going to push the bishop on through versus Beth Moore.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Judah Smith versus Stephen Furtick.
That's going to be a good one.
Battle of the tight pants.
Yep.
Battle of the tight pants. Yep. And Michael Todd versus Mark Driscoll.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I feel pretty good about this next round, too. I feel like I can just push them on through. But we are going to wait till the next episode.
Yeah.
We're going to come back. We're going to do this again. Hey, we hope you enjoyed that. We know that was a little bit longer than our normal fun, kind of crazy, off the wall thing. If you don't follow celebrity pastors, this might have been totally lost on you, and we're very sorry.
Yeah.
But we had a good time with that.
It was fun.
And we are excited to talk to you about Holy Week.
Holy Week
starts as this episode comes out, that starts today.
Yeah.
So it's the Monday before, it's the Monday after Palm Sunday. It's the Monday before Easter. We're excited to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break, come back in, and we're going to talk about Holy Week.
Love it.
So So we are back. We are ready for some real content
here. Yes, finally.
Real content.
Finally.
That was fun, but I think that took way longer than I anticipated it to. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, we are already at our normal time.
We're at it, yeah. For sure.
So,
for sure. Sorry, Jesus.
Yeah. But we do want to talk about Holy Week. It's something special. It's something great that we have both. I mean, you've been a Christian your whole life, right?
Pretty much.
Going to church, being a part
of it. Oh, yeah, since I was a baby.
So what did Holy Week look like for you when you were young?
Okay. So in our local church, in our little small town, Holy Week was a time where all of the churches in the community, no matter the denomination, they would host services all week.
All week.
Yeah. So starting Sunday night, it would start at somebody's church, and then Monday night it would be at another person's church, Tuesday, and so on and so on and so on. And that we would just all go and support each other's churches, which, you know, growing up in small town, you know, some are Pentecostal, some are Baptist, some are Methodist, some are even Catholic was thrown in there. So to be able to come together in that way was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And really something special that even as a kid, I really look forward to every week because just to see that many churches coming together, and I would see my friends that would go to other churches.
That's cool.
You know, so that was special for me.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I mean, and I grew up in the church too, but we didn't really do anything for Holy Week other than Easter was a big deal, and we did a community-wide sunrise service.
Oh, yeah.
And that was miserable as a kid. It's like, I got to get up at 6 a.m. to get to church. This is the worst.
Yep.
It's Sunday. Let me sleep. Anyway, so that was really about it. I think we may have done like a special Maundy Thursday.
Yeah.
Once. But we didn't do much for Good Friday.
Yeah, me either.
But at Hope, we have made Holy Week a pretty big deal.
Yes.
And I appreciate that because there is this tension that happens where with Easter there's so much joy that comes with the resurrection.
Right.
The rest of the week is really kind of a funeral procession. And most of Lent is a heartbreaking time of understanding your own brokenness and your need for a savior.
Yeah.
So I feel like over the last 40 days, you're prepping your heart to be reminded that you need Jesus. And thanks be to God that you have him.
Yes.
But throughout Holy Week, we really kind of turn up the volume on that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but even though I've done a pretty good job with my push-ups, I've not done a good job with everything else concerning Lent.
Yeah, me either.
And I think that 40 days is a long time.
It is.
And we tend to miss those things. And we realize that about our people.
Mm.
And so we try to make, especially Good Friday, at Hope is a really big thing. Really big thing. We put a lot of energy into it.
Yeah.
And I love that we do that. And we do a really good job with it.
Yeah.
You know, the worship and arts team.
It's beautiful, man.
So hard on it. And
it's beautiful.
And the other thing too is they're working really hard on that in the midst of prepping for Easter.
Yeah.
Which is our biggest Sunday of the year. Yeah,
for sure.
So it's not lost on me all that extra energy and effort. And last year, Dylan West and I had to, shout out Dylan, uproot a cross from the cross carry
on our own.
So one of the things we do at Hope is that there is a crowd of people that carry a cross out and plant it in the ground.
It's beautiful.
And there's three of them, and so it's the three crosses of Calvary. So
an amazing.
Really cool. Very emotional. Yeah,
it is.
Great thing. However, last year, one of the short crosses got planted in the middle.
I remember this.
And Dylan it was there kind of helping out with some other things. And I got to looking at it. I'm like, that cross is in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
It's the same height as the one on the other edge.
Yeah.
And so the other service had already started.
Oh, goodness.
And so we had the possibility of planting the large cross on the other end, which would have been, I mean.
Yeah.
It was whatever.
I mean,
but at the same time, it's not the aesthetic we were going for.
Yeah, for sure.
So I tapped Dylan. I said, hey, we got to carry this cross by ourselves. These things are heavy.
Yeah, for sure.
It doesn't feel heavy when there's 40 people lifting it. But, no, you know,
they're big.
When there's just two guys, it's a big cross.
It's big.
And we had to hike that thing out there and then uproot the one that was existing. And that was a challenge. And then we had to carry it back, plant the big one.
Yeah.
Or no. We moved the little one over. and left the big one for the for the group. So actually, now that I'm thinking about it, we did that wrong. We didn't need to carry that cross back and forth.
Yeah, I was gonna say you didn't. They had to. They had to carry it out there.
Idiots!
I love that you. A year ago, yeah, you're just figuring it out.
I just now figured it out because awesome. My shoulder was killing me.
Dude, I was when you were telling me, I was like, why wouldn't you just leave it?
And why would
for the service?
Why wouldn't we just? Well, because the people are. And why wouldn't we just take the cross that's there and shift it over to the side?
Right.
Man, Dylan, whoops, we made a mistake.
Praise God for you know, anyhow, now you know.
But Holy Week, it's a big deal. We love that.
Yeah.
And so what I want to talk about, and I don't know how long this conversation will go, and I'm not even sure if this is a good question, but how do we navigate the tension between grief and joy as we anticipate Easter?
I think that's a tough question. It's a good question.
So when I talk about grief, I'm talking about, there is an element to, especially the crucifixion of Jesus, like it should break our hearts.
Absolutely.
But it also should be this representation of love.
Yeah.
And something we should cherish because this is the revelation of God's great love for you. Jesus' passion for you. So I think that, I can't remember if it was in our devotional book or what it was, but there was somebody wrote, John 3:16 doesn't say, for God so hated sin that he sent his only one and only son. It was, for God so loved the world. Like, he's not motivated by hate. He's motivated by love.
Right.
And so there's that piece of, well, okay, Easter's supposed to be this picture of love. Love costs a lot. How do we deal with that? How do you deal with that? I don't know if you ever thought about it.
I think that there was a time where I didn't know that there was grief associated with Easter, right? I didn't pick up on it because I wasn't aware of it. I was just young and I wasn't really aware that, hey, you know, this isn't some big magical thing that happened. It is a, you know, it is very powerful, but what I'm saying is not this beautiful, you know, angelic depiction of Jesus taking our sin. No, it was horrific.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think all the plays I watched just didn't connect it for me. Mm-hmm. And I know it's, you know, what really connected it for me was watching The Passion.
Okay. I never watched it. I can't bring myself to do it.
It's a movie, right? Okay. But like when you see physically, when you're watching something so graphic happen to someone, and you put into perspective, they did this for you.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely powerful for me. And I'm not saying that man, Passion was my moment of just realizing that. But I'm saying, like, when I put that together and I said, wow, this is really grieving me. Like, what Jesus did for my sin is grieving me. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm really joyful that I didn't have to bear that.
Right.
So I don't really know how to answer that question really, other than just I've figured out over time that there is this tension. And for me, it's just, I try to understand that it's no small thing.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful, but it's also horrific in knowing that he did this and he didn't do it because he hated sin so much. He did it because he loved us so much.
Right.
And that he, what is the scripture? He bore our grief.
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
I think.
I know there's a song that says he bore our sin and shame.
I was going to go somewhere with that, but I'm not going to, because I want to make sure that was, anyway. So I guess there's just a thing there where it's like, man, I'm so thankful and I'm so grateful, that he took that upon himself, as horrific as it is, so that I wouldn't have to. So I like to recognize that and kind of stay in that place of, I want to have that journey of grief.
Yeah.
That kind of Lent takes you, that self, that journey of self-denial and that carrying the cross and that journey to the cross and that journey to Calvary. And I want to understand that there is a resurrection on the other side of that. So I think there's like a time where, you know, there's a time that's for grieving. of sin. There's a time for recognizing that, hey, man, this is, you know, and then also there's a resurrection point where we come out on the other side of that, and it is pure joy.
Well, and so to answer your question, I went ahead and looked it up. You were right. It's in Isaiah. It's in
Isaiah
53:4. It says, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows.
Yeah.
Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. Now, that's the English Standard Version. The New Living Translation is, yet it was our weakness that he carried.
Yeah.
It was our sorrows that weighed him down. And we thought his troubles, and we thought his troubles were a punishment from God, a punishment for his own sins. Mm. But it was ours.
It was ours.
You know? Yeah. And so, I think when I think about the tension there too, you're right. It's challenging because my temptation is to look at just the human suffering that Jesus endured on the cross.
Right.
Because that's the only framework that I have to wrap as a eternally sinful person.
Yeah.
Who's only been sinful.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like to live in perfect community with God the way that Jesus did. Yeah. And then for him to bear our sin and pain.
Yeah.
There has to be something, I would think, there's got to be a different separation, a different pain there that Jesus endured on our behalf that is even worse than the crucifixion. Now, the crucifixion, I was at church camp years and years ago, and my friend Matt, he asked me to teach a class on the crucifixion.
Okay.
And I got into the depths of this, and it became really sobering.
Yeah.
Just really sobering as to how this all would go down. And not just the physical pain and excruciating pain that he endured. The one of the things that jumped out to me there is how poetic that we see one of the most blatant examples of human perversion is the crucifixion.
Yeah.
That we can imagine to do that to another human being, no matter what they've done.
Yes.
That we as people are so broken that we can devise a situation where not only do you die slowly, but you don't die from the nails. You don't die from the whipping. You don't die through any of that. You die through suffocation.
Suffocation. Yeah.
Suffocation.
Yep.
And the pain that you experience to try to keep yourself alive, it's greater once you just give up.
Yep.
And so, crazy thing.
Yeah, it's horrific.
Crazy thing.
Yeah.
That, and you, if you, again, the parallels there is that it is a picture of how broken we are.
Absolutely.
How broken we are. Just the fact that there is such things as crucifixion.
Yeah.
Like that was an imagined thing by people.
Yeah.
Anyhow. So there's that piece. But then the other human element of Jesus is I had to think about all the people that watched their hope die.
Yeah.
Like the person that they really believed.
Dude, yeah.
That this guy is the answer.
Yeah.
And I think about John.
Yeah,
and
man.
Standing there with Mary and, you know, Jesus talking to him and being like, hey, this is your mother. And this is your son.
Yeah.
And that pass off there. And I can't imagine, not only were they best friends, but he had put all his eggs into that basket.
Everything.
Days before, he had asked them, who will sit at your hand or at your right side in the kingdom? Who will be great in the kingdom? Like, they were sure that this was the answer, that he was the answer. And to watch him die like that, oh my goodness!
Yeah,
just the
their hope died.
Yeah, their hope died, and
We don't talk about that enough.
No,
like, and we don't think about that.
And really. I think that the Passion has done a good job of shining the light on the incredible pain that Jesus endured.
Brutal,
but there is that other side of it. The things that we first can't get a hand on. That what is it? What does it look like to be in total communion with God and then absolutely absent from him?
Yeah.
We can't put a human quotient on that.
Absolutely not.
But then the other piece of that is the real emotion of the day for Jesus' followers surrounding that situation. Mm. It would have just been absolutely heartbreaking. And you think about all the people that just celebrated his entry into the city.
Yeah.
7 days before.
Yep.
Not even 7 days before.
Yep.
And so all of that to say, with this tension between grief and joy, I think it's important for us to hold that grief.
Yeah.
Only because it helps us fully appreciate the love.
Absolutely.
To hold the grief helps us appreciate the love. And what I mean by that is some of the most blatant and obvious demonstrations of love that I have witnessed in my life are in the midst of incredible, incredible pain.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I think about like my children being born.
Yeah.
Like their mother went through so much.
Wow, that's good. That's a good.
To bring them to the world.
Yeah.
Went through so much. And not just in that day.
Wow.
In the weeks, months before.
Yeah.
And in the weeks, months after. Like there's, mothers, they give their body over to their children.
Yeah.
Even just the run-of-the-mill mom is going to give their body over to their children because that is the toll that pregnancy takes on a mother.
Right.
And there is pain that comes with that.
Mm.
There is change that comes with that. There is hurt that comes with that. Even with even all of the medicines in the world can't. But that is love. And it's one of the purest, most real versions of love that we get to see is like a mother and their children. And if we miss the sacrifice, we don't fully appreciate the love. And I think about like even beyond that moment, the people that I feel like have done church the best, who've revealed the heart of the church the best, are people who show up in these moments where we're holding grief and it's hard and it's difficult.
Oh wow.
And,
that's
beautiful. When my friend Micah died, who surrounded that family was their church small group and the church. The church came around. The community of Mount Pulaski and the church there surrounded that family and loved them so well.
Yeah.
And it made me take notice of that.
Yeah, for sure.
But then it made others who were outside of the church, they noticed what great love this was. And it wasn't because, they were nice and they were there at the house. It was that they were in the dirt, mourning with his family.
Right.
And they were mourning their own loss of their friend and their brother, but also mourning with his family and looking to take care of them, to rise up and be around them. And so I think that...
That's powerful.
I think that there's something to that. If we drop the grief and only pick up the joy, we miss out on the love that comes through the pain.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think this week, as we look at Holy Week, be aware of the pain. Not just the physical pain, not just the physical anguish, but the full encompassing picture of the horror of the passion. But the passion only is the passion because of the pain that it exacted of God. And I don't know if that, does that
that's
click?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, all right.
It does. It brings it into this full picture. Instead of looking at it from two different places, joy and grief, it brings it together. When you use the analogy of childbirth, it's a beautiful pain, but it's still
pain.
It's love.
Yeah,
it's still pain.
Yeah.
It still really hurts.
To say that it doesn't hurt because of the joy that comes is to rob the mother of the great love that they've shed for their child.
And I think if we take away looking at the cross, if we can't have one without the other.
Oh yeah.
You know, what Jesus is doing should bring us joy, but there's an immense amount of pain that came with that. Something came out from the other side of that, which is beautiful, but there's still that pain that's pictured with that love.
Yeah.
And it's the same.
One more thing that kind of came to me isn't the temptation is whenever we look at the sacrifice of Christ and we talk about passion and all these other things that Jesus endured, it's like, if he did that for me, what can't he ask of me?
Right.
Is kind of the ongoing thing. And that's a fair question. I'm not saying don't think of it that way.
Sure.
But I am going to say don't think of it that way. I want instead, let's turn it a little bit.
Okay.
For those that you love, what wouldn't you endure for them? Mm. For the ones you love, what wouldn't you endure for them?
Yeah.
What suffering wouldn't you take on for them? And would you bear it grudgingly, or would you take on the suffering knowing the joy that would be before them?
Yeah.
If we begin to instead look at, we owe Jesus back for what he's done on the cross, and instead be motivated by our own willingness to suffer out of love, out of glory, out of saying, you know what? I do not want to do this, but this will so glorify Jesus, and he is the desire of my heart, and I will submit to the suffering because of the glory before Christ. Mm. Out of love, not out of guilt or shame or compulsion, but instead because my heart longs for Jesus.
Yeah.
Because my heart loves Jesus and wants to see Jesus amplified more than anything else, even myself, I will suffer. The same way I would suffer for my children, the same way I would suffer for my friend, the same way that I would give up to be there for my parent, be there for my loved one, to even, you know, be there for that youth group student. It's easy sometimes when we put a face on suffering, we're like, you know what? And I've walked into some of those situations that I talked about that were just terrible. I did not want to be there.
Sure.
But I was there because I was so motivated by love for those people.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the things that we forget about Good Friday, about the Passion, about Lent, about all of these things, it is not, if he did that for me, what can I hold back from him? Instead, as he did that for me, he loves me so.
Yeah.
I want to return that love too.
Absolutely.
And so if he calls me to suffer, which he will.
Absolutely.
If he calls me to say no, which he will.
Absolutely.
If he calls you to do something contrary to what your flesh wants.
Absolutely.
What your heart wants, but it's within what he wants. Mm-hmm. You're not saying, you know what, Jesus did me a solid on the cross. I better pay him back.
Yeah.
Instead, it is, I know what it is to be loved, and I want to love in return.
Absolutely.
And so I will say yes to what you have before me, because I know it will glorify your name. Mm. And that's what I, and so as we wade into this week of suffering, remember that the pain that you experience is that incredible revelation of the love that was shown to you, but also the pain that we are called to. It's not an IOU.
That's good.
It's just the opportunity to love back.
Wow.
And love in the same manner.
Wow. And just abide in him.
Yeah. So I don't know if that makes, does that click? Does that make sense? You know, come together.
That's good.
All right.
That's good stuff. Man.
Once we start going on it, it's a deep, deep,
deep it thing. It is. It is.
So
it's beautiful.
Yeah. But the other thing, too, is as Christians, we know that Sunday is coming.
Yeah, it is.
Hope may have died on the cross, but it came back alive a couple days later.
Sure
and
did.
So we are excited to talk about Easter, too.
Yeah, we are.
And we're going to do that.
Hunting them eggs.
But we, yeah, that's right. Oh, I forgot we can get to talk about that. But we do want to leave people in that tension.
Yeah, man.
Hey, don't miss Holy Week. Use this as an opportunity to be in the funeral procession, to mourn, to grieve, to know what it required of God to love you so, but to be reminded that he loves you so. Mm. And this is the demonstration of that love.
That's beautiful. I love it, man. I just knew, I knew you'd kill it with this conversation.
Well, tell the people what they want to hear.
Hey, it's been good. But remember, especially this week, God loved us first, God loved us most, and God loves us best. I think I got that backwards.
You did.
But we love you anyway. This is the Bad Apples Podcast.